Welcome to NeuroNoodles, Neurofeedback Neuropsychology Podcast featuring tech legend Jay Gunkelman. He is the man who has read well over 500,000 brain scans. Our goal is to provide information and promote options for better mental health. The NeuroNoodle Podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you, like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide Workshop March 4th and 5th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media, get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor cap is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now. Join us at the 7th Annual Super Brain Summit at Bradley University Center for Collaborative Brain Research. It's featuring speaker Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor. She's the author of The Grieving Brain, The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Our Love and Loss. If you want to get more information regarding registration, contact Gwen Howarter. She's at ghowarter@bradley.edu or call her at 309-677-3900. If you want more information regarding programming, you can contact Dr. Lori Russell Chapin herself at 309-677-3186 or email lar@bradley.edu. I threw a suggestion of Dudley Moore disease out there just because my old man passed away from it, and his brother had Parkinson's, and they say none of this stuff is hereditary. And, you know, I'm trying to record as much as I can of my existence here, because I played football too. But is it supraparanucleic palsy? Is that what it is?
In fact, if you look at it, it's progressive supranuclear palsy.
Nuclear palsy, okay.
And it's mistakenly diagnosed as Parkinson's or Alzheimer's quite often at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, you've got a palsy, so you've got the tremor and rigidity like Parkinson's, and you've got cognitive changes like Alzheimer's. So this is not easily diagnosed at the start, but eventually it becomes quite obvious. Yeah. And, you know, Parkinson's disease is related to a disturbance in a chemical alpha synuclein. And the progressive supranuclear palsy is a tauopathy. Tau is a substance. Tau, like Alzheimer's and frontotemporal dementia, well, also progressive supranuclear palsy. Thus it's easily confused there. But it also goes by some other name, you know, like everything in medicine. You find it kind of popping up in a couple of different spots. Nuchal dystonia. and my pet peeve about people putting their names on things.
Yeah, put your name on it.
this has three people hyphenated together. I guess they had to argue as to who was actually the one who found the syndrome of it's Richardson Steele Oslewski syndrome palsy. Now, that should give you a freaking palsy. Pisses me off when people start to try and claim these things with their name. The describing this as a progressive supranuclear palsy is an accurate description. You don't have to remember who the hell Richardson or Steele, or, you know, this is as bad as Gunkelman, Oslewski. So you know, but it's not an easy initial diagnosis, but eventually the damage ends up mounting to the point where all of its symptoms kind of come together and it differentiates itself. It's not just the rigidity and palsy. You can't use your eyes properly.
Well, it's a very slow progressing. It's a slow death. And eventually you can't swallow. From what I remember, you can't swallow anymore. And then you get the feeding tube and then you get the pneumonia and then that's it.
It's, yeah, they basically say there's 3 to 5 years expectancy from a full diagnosis. You know, not from the initial stiffness and palsy, but it's not as slow as Parkinson's, right, which has a few more years expectancy beyond that. But it's not, quote, hereditary, but there's a genetic towards the tau pathology. So, but it's not handed down in a family like some other problems.
Now, Jay, you bring up tau. What is tau again? Because we talked about CTE. It's a protein.
Yeah.
And is that where if you see that protein, it starts to eat away at the vascular and then it turns brown and it dies? Is the same thing as CTE or how is it different?
Yeah, and it also folds, multiple folding. And they're trying to figure out what the deal is with the different kind of folding. But it's a progressive pathology when tau starts to mount up, and that then you get the plaque basically. And what the anatomy that's damaged in this is essentially starting with the brainstem, which is related to the ability to keep your eyes functioning, and obviously the frontal eye fields are associated with this brainstem circuit. And on the way to the frontal lobe, you go through the basal ganglia and the substantia nigra. And the substantia nigra is the commonality with Parkinson's disease, thus the tremor and rigidity. But eventually the frontal lobes are fully involved here as well, and you get personality changes. And, you know, most of the time, personality changes aren't necessarily for the better, you know. I could think of a few personalities that I'd like to see change, but this is not the kind of change. I mean, that nobody comes saying, you know, Uncle Ralph is now nicer. You know, the personality changes are impulsive decisions and crazy purchases, and you know, the when the frontal lobes are gone, judgment and rational judgment and impulse control are shot as well. The tremor and rigidity, when you're standing up, this is axial rigidity, and in progressive supranuclear palsy, the axial rigidity, they lean back, and in Parkinson's disease, they lean forward. The axial rigidity leaning backwards, they basically have to use a walker that's a weighted walker, because as they start to fall backwards, they've got to be able to pull themselves forward with it. Not too many walkers would, you know, give you something to grab onto and pull forward. So they have walkers that have a substantial weight in the front of them. And, obviously they recommend shoes without heels, and anyway, their difficulty with axial rigidity. And again, that somewhat differentiates the forward leaning Parkinson's disease from the backward leaning axial rigidity when you see it here. Swallowing becomes difficult, and eye movements are obvious. That's not such a common presentation in Parkinsonism until the very end. Usually when eye movements start to become really problematic, this is the thing that usually flags the doctor who's trying to figure out what it is, that this is what it is. But it doesn't mean that they can do anything about it. There's no right. treatment as such. Levodopa, which is effective in Parkinson's disease, totally ineffective. There's some people that report an initial benefit, but that's like any sort of placebo effect. You have an initial positive response and it goes away. So levodopa is not really, this is not just a movement disorder, the brainstem, the frontal lobes. I mean, this is more than just a substantia nigra going bad like Parkinson's.
If you're doing an EEG, I know you can't tell CTE from a EEG, but you can see a groupings of possibilities. If you had an EEG, where would you see the problem starting? In the temple again, or what do you think?
In this case, you'd probably see the difficulty as you see it in the Parkinson's disease, because the initial issue with that, and that's basically seen frontal, frontal central, the frontal lobe, the basal ganglia regulate the motor strip, and that's where you'd end up seeing that aspect of it. And then obviously the personality change ends up being frontal as well. So we expect quite a bit of change up front. And frontotemporal dementia ends up with substantial frontal change as well. Parkinson's disease has a less pronounced change than frontotemporal dementia does.
So Parkinson's and supranucleic,
progressive supranuclear palsy.
So it's related to Parkinson's? Is it related to any other types
of
brain
disease? No, it's not related to Parkinson's. That's hard. When you get to the literature, you're going to see it referred to as a Parkinsonian dementia. But then they go on to say that it's not Parkinson's and it's related to tau pathology, which is more related to Alzheimer's and frontotemporal dementia than it is to Parkinson's. Again, alpha-synuclein versus tau, totally different substances and different brain areas involved. The commonality is that the substantia nigra ends up being problematic in both. And that's the common symptom, the motor rigidity and tremor.
Is there anything you can do to train to help the symptoms of this? I would imagine early on, maybe you could do something, but later on, forget about it.
I would be the last one to say, forget about it.
Right.
do what you can, but there's no known treatment. Like any progressive dementia, there are people trying stimulation technologies that seem to have some effect. We'll see across time how all the larger control studies sort of pan out. But at this point, there are stimulation, photobiomodulation that seems to be being used for Alzheimer's. There's some small and short run studies that show that they can maintain their level of function, where the non-treatment control group continues to progress. There's some things you can try, but it's not like there's something specific.
Yeah. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neurosciences NeuroGuide Workshop March 4th and 5th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Join us at the 7th Annual Super Brain Summit at Bradley University Center for Collaborative Brain Research. It's featuring speaker Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor. She's the author of The Grieving Brain, The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Our Love and Loss. If you want to get more information regarding registration, contact Gwen Huarter. She's at ghowarter@bradley.edu or call her at 309-677-3900. If you want more information regarding programming, you can contact Dr. Lori Russell Chapin herself at 309-677-3186 or email lar@bradley.edu.
There's some evidence. It's spotty evidence, but it's environmental clusters that have worked with a TCE or other solvents this palsy may end up having a trigger, a chemical trigger that kind of turns on the tau pathology. And there's a fairly strong link between TCE and Parkinson's, but they believe also the progressive supranuclear palsy may have a similar kind of a connection or trigger.
Jay, what is TCE?
Trichloroethylene. They used to use it as a solvent. actually, there. Some people actually used it at home as a cleaning solvent to clean things, and which you don't get it from a store to do that, but you might have gotten it from work as a solvent. And electronic manufacturing used it as a degreaser on their chips and stuff for a long time. Now they have water-based degreaser and save themselves the toxicity and the exposure to workers as well. But TCE, it can evaporate if it's in the liquid, but if it's in the soil, it can last a long time. And there are sites where TCE is buried at depth, and they try to cap it. But the difficulty now is in the San Francisco Bay Area, for instance, AstraZeneca had a site where they produced chemicals, and the toxicity that's buried there is capped, and now they wanted to build homes on top of it.
Yeah,
but that was almost pushed through. It was, I think, stopped fairly effectively now. Sea level rise brings up groundwater, and all of the contaminants that would end up having come up underneath all the homes. Initially, they were saying that they would only have parking on the ground level and be homes above, but their designs change across time.
So my dad and uncle, they're from Eastern Europe, Latvia. So, you had the Russians, Germans coming in wartime. They could have been subject to, and we're speculating, right? Crystal ball, but there was no Environmental Protection Agency over there. I don't think there is one now.
No. Well, but, goodness, our soldiers had burn pits, So,
yeah. Latrines, yeah.
Well, in fact, Biden's son, who died of brain cancer, ended up having exposure to chemical burn pits as well. Life is hazardous to life.
So a burn pit is like you pour gasoline on something and you burn it, and then you get the fumes
They were dumping chemicals in to dispose of the chemicals and just essentially burning them.
Isn't that what happened
in Ohio here? No, they deliberately lit it in order to dispose of it.
Yeah,
that there was no way to really handle it, and the rail regulatory system was taken apart under Trump, who was really big on taking apart regulatory things. So the number of people on a train, how yeah. long the trains could be, the safety levels, all that ended up. The vinyl chloride basically had its the train cars listed as non-hazardous. So if you have a train with enough hazardous material on it, there are specific regulations about how long it can be and what kind of staffing has to be on it and everything. But this was a multiple mile long train with a person in the engine, nobody at the back seeing the sparks flying out as the carriage was falling apart on a car that ended up derailing them. So,
Jay, the progression of PSP, I'm just going to call it that because I'm going to have to edit myself every 2 seconds. what if you had a guess, like how would it start if it's a 5-year disease? In my case, what I saw was more like an 8 to 10. It's how does it start and how does it progress through? And as it progresses through, what can you do to use EEG or neurofeedback to try to help some of the symptoms as you're going along this path?
Well, tau as a protein ends up having more of it. And again, the folding patterns of it end up causing further problems. So the progression is more tau and more folding. And unfortunately, it appears irreversible in these circumstances. And it isn't like the treatment. Well, get a walker with weight on the front and put in a feeding tube fairly early so that you don't end up inhaling your food because you can't swallow and end up with pneumonia. Just adapting to the pathology best you can, but it's not like there's a treatment.
Yeah. So does it start in one place or it just depends?
Well, brainstem on up.
Yeah. So back to front?
Well, brainstem, as you follow the brainstem up, you get to the basal forebrain, which includes the substantia nigra and other nuclear bodies that are involved in this, and then the frontal lobe itself, where the personality change happens. So...
So I remember speech came into it. You could tell, like with Parkinson's, there's not as much of a speech problem as I noticed with PSP.
Yeah. Well, it's Parkinson's is fairly limited to the substantia nigra, and it's not something that takes over the speech areas on the dorsolateral frontal area. It's in a basal forebrain nuclear body. And it's bad enough, you know?
Yeah. And you don't want to get it.
No. It finds enough people the way it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, Dr. Sturman ends up having a fairly advanced Parkinson's at this point, and is not doing well enough to get out to meetings yeah. anymore, and I feel badly about that, you know.
But at least with Parkinson's, you can do some type of stimulation, right, to improve what's going on. Where does the stimulation go?
In fact, in Parkinson's, they can put in a stimulator in the subthalamus, and that can end up turning off the tremor. It doesn't necessarily stop the progression of the disease, but it allows you to move appropriately again for a substantial period of time. It's a good use of a stimulator.
How would you compare it to like a pacemaker?
Well, it's not a pacemaker, but what you have is a thalamocortical dysrhythmia. And a thalamocortical dysrhythmia is essentially a decreased input to an area. And what they've done is essentially put in an artificial input. It's essentially a neuroplasticity gone awry. If you lose an arm, the arm may end up having phantom pain. And phantom pain is essentially
Jay, what is phantom pain?
So you've got little Johnny here who's got an arm on one side, but on this side he's got a stump. And basically in the brain, you've got a homunculus that goes from the top of your head, and inside the fissure, you've got your feet and toes and your butt and lower back. You've got a big area attributed to the hand, and you get a big area associated with the face. You've got the tongue, and then it goes into the Sylvian fissure. All the inside of your mouth and the smooth muscles all the way through your alimentary tract are in there. So what you've lost is essentially the hand and arm area. And the thalamus deep in the brain that is sending information up to there, because there's no, you know, there's nothing coming in, this column doesn't stimulate the cortex anymore here. When the cortex isn't getting a signal, the alpha on that column slows. And instead of having it, let's say 10 hertz alpha, some, you know, Goldilocks frequency, you know, a 10 hertz alpha slows down to about 6. And it's outside of the normal alpha band. But when it slows to that extent, it turns off the lateral inhibition, and the area surrounding it can invade. And what you see is a ring of gamma. Surround that gamma that's on, permanently on. It doesn't chirp on and off like normal gamma. And that's the surrounding area invading. So at that point, if you touch the face on little Johnny over here, you may actually misperceive that as some stimulus in the arm, because this area has invaded. And let's say we're not talking about phantom pain. Let's say we've got a cochlea in your ear. The big fat end of the cochlea is low frequencies, and the little tiny skinny end of it is high frequencies. And all of that low frequency and high frequency goes into the medial geniculate and the thalamus, and that sends it up to the auditory cortex. And the low frequencies are fine, but you know, little Johnny went to too many rock concerts, and he was shooting guns with no hearing protection. And, you know, he's riding motorcycles and wind in his ears. And over time, his high frequencies just weren't there anymore. So on the cortex, the high frequencies here don't get an input, and other things surrounding it invade. So little Johnny has tinnitus. And it's the same mechanism, a thalamocortical dysrhythmia, a thalamocortical column that's not doing enough input. The surrounding cortex takes over. And you can see that again as a slowed alpha peak with a gamma in the surround. And that's basically the same thing that you end up seeing in the motor strip area for Parkinson's disease or movement disorders like a central tremor and these palsies. So different locations. You also see it in reward deficiency syndrome, which is like eating disorders, addiction, some depression at the anterior cingulate. So the thalamocortical dysrhythmia is a foundational basic failure mode in the brain that can be a failure in different networks. Depending upon the network, you end up with a different symptom, but it's a simple fix. You lost your high frequency hearing. Well, you might be able to put a hearing aid in and replace it, in which case the input's back and it kicks the other stuff out. So you with a hearing aid, you might be able to turn off your tinnitus if you get it early enough. Phantom pain, it's not like you're going to get a new arm, but you can learn to live with it, and some people end up having an implant that can turn off the pain. Dirk Dritter puts in an implant that turns off tinnitus. Instead of having this column stimulate the area, you can put an electrode on top of this and stimulate from the top, and an implant put into the temporal area on the auditory cortex, basically, can turn off a tinnitus with the electrical stimulation. And yeah, it's entirely possible to do that. They do it obviously deeper in the brain for Parkinsonism. It's not a simple surface a spot like the auditory cortex is. You got to get down in order to get to it. But the subthalamic nucleus is easily done. And nowadays they actually have advanced implants that have the ability to record the underlying EEG that's going on there as well.
And
progressive dementia, I mean, the little fragments of you that still hang around, you know, and it's, but
quality of life.
Yeah, yeah.
You're hanging around for somebody else, not for yourself, you know. So,
and Lewy body, which looks like Parkinson's quite often at the beginning, except the hallucinations and delusions and stuff are much more active. And people that end up having that, and then they get a bit better, and they realize they're going to go back again. That
Robin Williams. Anybody else with that particular disease?
It's not an uncommon choice for people that have it to end up doing suicide.
Well, Jay Gunkelman, thank you for another great neurofeedback podcast, my friend.
The NeuroNoodle podcast is supported by listeners and businesses just like you, like our gold supporter, Applied Neuroscience, and our silver supporter, Mind Media. Earn up to 16 CEU hours by attending Applied Neuroscience's NeuroGuide Workshop March 4th and 5th in Madeira Beach, Florida. It's led by none other than Dr. Robert Thatcher himself. There are two ways you can attend, online or in person, with the link appliedneuroscience.com/attend-ng-workshops. Mind Media, get the latest EEG and neurofeedback technology from mindmedia.com. Their semi-dry sensor cap is a wonder to see, and their EEG amplifiers have been trusted in the field for decades. Their neurofeedback and QEG courses will get you up to speed in no time. Visit mindmedia.com now.
Join us at the 7th Annual Super Brain Summit at Bradley University Center for Collaborative Brain Research. It's featuring speaker Dr. Mary Frances O'Connor. She's the author of The Grieving Brain, The Surprising Science of How We Learn from Our Love and Loss. If you want to get more information regarding registration, contact Gwen Howarter. She's at ghowarter@bradley.edu or call her at 309-677-3900. If you want more information regarding programming, you can contact Dr. Lori Russell Chapin herself at 309-677-3186 or email lar@bradley.edu.